all the changes in the desolation of Smaug. Gloin looked at Frodo and smiled.
"You were very fond of Bilbo, were you not?" he asked.
"Yes," answered Frodo. "I'd rather see him than all the towers and palaces in the world." At length the feast came to an end. Elrond and Arwen rose and went down the hall, and the company followed them in due order. The doors were thrown open, and they went across a wide passage and through other doors, and came into a further hall. In it were no tables, but a bright fire was burning in a great hearth between the carven pillars upon either side. Frodo found himself walking with Gandalf.
"This is the Hall of Fire," said the wizard. "Here you will hear many songs and tales, if you can keep awake. But except on high days, it usually stands empty and quiet, and people come here who wish for peace and thought. There's always a fire here, all year round, but there's little other light."
As Elrond entered and went towards the seat prepared for him, elvish minstrels began to make sweet music. Slowly the hall filled, and Frodo looked with delight upon the many fair faces that were gathered together. The golden firelight played upon them and shimmered in their hair. Suddenly he noticed, not far from the further end of the fire, a small dark figure seated on a stool with his back propped against a pillar. Beside him on the ground was a drinking cup and some bread. Frodo wondered whether he was ill, if people were ever ill in Rivendell, and had been unable to come to the feast. His head seemed sunk in sleep on his breast, and a fold of his dark cloak was drawn over his face. Elrond went forward and stood beside the silent figure.
"Awake, little master," he said with a smile.
Then, turning to Frodo, he beckoned to him.
"Now at last the hour has come that you've wished for, Frodo," he said. "Here's a friend that you've long missed."
The dark figure raised its head and uncovered its face.
"Bilbo!"
cried Frodo with sudden recognition, and he sprang forward.
"Hello, Frodo, my lad," said Bilbo.
"So you've got here at last. I hoped you'd manage it. Well, well, so all this feasting is in your honour, I hear. I hope you enjoyed it."
"Why weren't you there?" cried Frodo. "And why haven't I been allowed to see you before?"
"Because you were asleep. I've seen a good deal of you. I've sat by your side with Sam each day. But as for the feast, I don't go in for such things much now. And I had something else to do."
"What were you doing?"
"Why, sitting and thinking. I do a lot of that nowadays, and this is the best place to do it in as a rule." "Wake up, indeed," he said, cocking an eye at Elrond.
There was a bright twinkle in it, and no sign of sleepiness that Frodo could see.
"Wake up. I was not asleep, Master Elrond, if you want to know. You've all come out from your feast too soon, and you've disturbed me in the middle of making up a song. I was stuck over a line or two and was thinking about them, but now I don't suppose I shall ever get them right. There'll be such a deal of singing that the ideas will be driven clean out of my head. I shall have to get my friend the Dúnadan to help me. Where is he?"
Elrond laughed.
"He shall be found," he said.
"Then you two shall go into a corner and finish your task, and we will hear it and judge it before we end our merrymakings." Messengers were sent to find Bilbo's friend, though none knew where he was or why he hadn't been present at the feast. In the meanwhile, Frodo and Bilbo sat side by side, and Sam came quickly and placed himself near them. They talked together in soft voices, oblivious of the mirth and music in the hall about them. Bilbo had not much to say of himself. When he'd left Hobbiton, he'd wandered off aimlessly, along the road or in the country on either side, but somehow he had steered all the time towards Rivendell.
"I got here without much adventure," he said, "and after rest I went on with the dwarves to Dale, my last journey. I shan't travel again. Old Balin had gone away. Then I came back here, and here I've been. I've done this and that. I've written some more of my book. And, of course, I make up a few songs. I sing them occasionally, just to please me, I think. For, of course, they aren't really good enough for Rivendell. and I listen and I think. Time doesn't seem to pass here. It just is a remarkable place altogether. I hear all kinds of news from over the mountains and out of the south, but hardly anything from the Shire. I heard about the ring, of course. Gandalf has not been here often. Not that he's told me a great deal. He's become closer than ever these last few years. The Dúnadan has told me more. Fancy that ring of mine causing such a disturbance. It's a pity that Gandalf didn't find out more sooner. I could have brought the thing here myself long ago without so much trouble. I thought several times of going back to Hobbiton for it. But I'm getting old, and they would not let me. Gandalf and Elrond, I mean. They seemed to think that the enemy was looking high and low for me, and would make mincemeat of me if he caught me tottering about in the wild. And Gandalf said, "The ring has passed on, Bilbo. It would do no good to you or to others if you tried to meddle with it again." Odd sort of remark, just like Gandalf. But he said he was looking after you, so I let things be. I'm frightfully glad to see you safe and sound. He paused and looked at Frodo doubtfully. "Have you got it here?" he asked in a whisper. "I can't help feeling curious, you know, after all I've heard. I should very much like just to peep at it again." "Yes, I've got it," answered Frodo, feeling a strange reluctance. "It looks just the same as ever it did."
"Well, I should just like to see it for a moment," said Bilbo.
When he dressed, Frodo found that while he slept the ring had been hung about his neck on a new chain, light but strong. Slowly he drew it out. Bilbo put out his hand, but Frodo quickly drew back the ring. To his distress and amazement, he found that he was no longer looking at Bilbo. A shadow seemed to have fallen between them, and through it he found himself eyeing a little wrinkled creature with a hungry face and bony, groping hands. He felt a desire to strike him. The music and singing round them seemed to falter, and a silence fell. Bilbo looked quickly at Frodo's face and passed his hand across his eyes.
"I understand now," he said. "Put it away. I'm sorry. Sorry you've come in for this burden. Sorry about everything. Don't adventures ever have an end? I suppose not. Someone else always has to carry on the story. Well, it can't be helped. I wonder if it's any good trying to finish my book. But don't let's worry about it now. Let's have some real news. Tell me all about the Shire."
Frodo hid the ring away, and the shadow passed, leaving hardly a shred of memory. The light and music of Rivendell was about him again. Bilbo smiled and laughed happily. Every item of news from the Shire that Frodo could tell, aided and corrected now and again by Sam, was of the greatest interest to him, from the felling of the least tree to the pranks of the smallest child in Hobbiton. They were so deep in the doings of the Four Farthings that they did not notice the arrival of a man clad in dark green cloth. For many minutes he stood looking down at them with a smile. Suddenly Bilbo looked up.
"Ah, there you are at last, Dúnadan," he cried.
"Strider," said Frodo, "you seem to have a lot of names."
"Well, Strider is one that I haven't heard before anyway," said Bilbo.
"What do you call him that for?"
"They call me that in Bree," said Strider, laughing, "and that is how I was introduced to him."
"And why do you call him Dúnadan?" asked Frodo.
"The Dúnadan," said Bilbo.
"He's often called that here, but I thought you knew enough Elvish at least to know Dúnadan, Man of the West, Númenórean. But this is not the time for lessons." He turned to Strider. "Where have you been, my friend? Why weren't you at the feast? The Lady Arwen was there."
Strider looked down at Bilbo gravely.
"I know," he said, "but often I must put mirth aside. Eladan and Elro here have returned out of the wild unlooked for, and they had tidings that I wished to hear at once."
"Well, my dear fellow," said Bilbo, "now you've heard the news, can't you spare me a moment? I want your help in something urgent. Elrond says this song of mine is to be finished before the end of the evening, and I'm stuck.
Let's go off into a corner and polish it up.
Strider smiled.
Come then, he said. Let me hear it.
Frodo was left to himself for a while, for Sam had fallen asleep. He was alone and feeling rather forlorn, although all about him the folk of Rivendell were gathered. But those near him were silent, intent upon the music of the voices and the instruments, and they gave no heed to anything else. Frodo began to listen. At first the beauty of the melodies and of the interwoven words in elven tongues, even though he understood them little, held him in a spell as soon as he began to attend to them. Almost it seemed that the words took shape, and visions of far lands and bright things that he had never yet imagined opened out before him, and the firelit hall became like a golden mist above seas of foam that sighed upon the margins of the world. Then the enchantment became more and more dreamlike, until he felt that an endless river of swelling gold and silver was flowing over him, too multitudinous for its pattern to be comprehended. It became part of the throbbing air about him, and it drenched and drowned him. Swiftly he sank under its shining weight into a deep realm of sleep. There he wandered long in a dream of music that turned into running water, and then suddenly into a voice. It seemed to be the voice of Bilbo chanting verses, faint at first, and then clearer ran the words. Earendil was a mariner that tarried in Arvernian. He built a boat of timber felled in Nimbrethil to journey in. Her sails he wove of silver fair, of silver were her lanterns made. Her prow was fashioned like a swan, and light upon her banners laid. In panoply of ancient kings, in chained rings he armoured him, his shining shield was scored with runes, to ward all wounds and harm from him. His bow was made of dragon horn, his arrow shorn of ebony, of silver was his habergeon, his scabbard of chalcedony. His sword of steel was valiant, of adamant his helmet tall, an eagle plume upon his crest, upon his breast an emerald. Beneath the moon and under star he wandered far from northern strands, bewildered on enchanted ways beyond the days of mortal lands, from gnashing of the narrow ice where shadow lies on frozen hills, from nether heats and burning waste. He turned in haste, and roving still on starless waters far astray, at last he came to night of naught, and passed, and never sight he saw of shining shore nor light he sought. The winds of wrath came driving him, and blindly in the foam he fled from west to east, and errandless, unheralded he homeward sped. There flying Elwing came to him, and flame was in the darkness lit, more bright than light of diamond, the fire upon her carcanet. The Silmaril she bound on him, and crowned him with the living light, and dauntless then with burning brow he turned his prow. And in the night from other world beyond the sea, there strong and free a storm arose, a wind of power in Tar-Meneil, by paths that seldom mortal goes, his boat it bore with biting breath, as might of death across the grey and long-forsaken seas distressed. From east to west he passed away. Through ever night he back was borne on black and roaring waves that ran o'er leagues unlit and foundered shores that drowned before the days began, until he heard on strands of pearl, when ends the world, the music long, wherever foaming billows roll, the yellow gold and jewels won. He saw the mountain silent rise, where twilight lies upon the knees of Valinor, and Eldamar beheld afar beyond the seas. A wanderer escaped from night, to haven white he came at last, to elven home the green and fair, where keen the air, where pale as glass beneath the hill of Ilmarin, a glimmer in a valley sheer, the lamplit towers of Tirion are mirrored on the shadow mere. He tarried there from errantry, and melodies they taught to him,
and sages old him marvels told, and harps of gold they brought to him. They clothed him then in elven white, and seven lights before him sent, as through the Calacerian to hidden land forlorn he went. He came unto the timeless halls, where shining fall the countless years, and endless reigns the elder king in Ilmarin on mountain sheer, and words unheard were spoken then of folk, of men, and elven kin. Beyond the world were visions showed, forbid to those that dwelt therein. A ship then new they built for him, of mithril and of elven glass, with shining prow, no shaven oar nor sail she bore on silver mast. The Silmaril as lantern light, and banner bright with living flame, to gleam thereon by Elbereth herself was set, who thither came and wings immortal made for him, and laid on him undying doom to sail the shoreless skies and calm behind the sun and light of moon. From Ever-Even's lofty hills, where softly silver fountains fall, his wings him bore, a wandering light beyond the might mountain wall. From world's end then he turned away, and yearned again to find afar his home, through shadows journeying, and burning as an island star. On high above the mists he came, a distant flame before the sun, a wonder ere the waking dawn, where grey the Norland waters run. And over middle earth he passed, and heard at last the weeping sore of women and of elven maids in elder days, in years of yore. But on him mighty doom was laid, till moon should fade, and orb-bed star to pass, and tarry nevermore on hither shores where mortals are. For ever still a herald on an errand that should never rest, to bear his shining lamp afar, the Flammifer of Westerness. The chanting ceased. Frodo opened his eyes and saw that Bilbo was seated on his stool in a circle of listeners who were smiling and applauding. "Now we had better have it again," said an elf. Bilbo got up and bowed. "I'm flattered, Lindir," he said. "But it would be too tiring to repeat it all." "Not too tiring for you," the elves answered, laughing. "You know you're never tired of reciting your own verses. But really, we can't answer your question at one hearing." "What?" cried Bilbo. "You can't tell which parts were mine and which were the Dunedain's." "It's not easy for us to tell the difference between two mortals," said the elf. "Nonsense, Lindir," snorted Bilbo. "If you can't distinguish between a man and a hobbit, your judgment is poorer than I imagined. They're as different as peas and apples."
"Maybe. To sheep, other sheep no doubt appear different," laughed Lindir. "Or to shepherds. But mortals have not been our study. We have other business."
"I won't argue with you," said Bilbo. "I'm sleepy after so much music and singing. I'll leave you to guess, if you want to." He got up and came towards Frodo. "Well, that's over," he said in a low voice. "It went off better than I expected. I don't often get asked for a second hearing. What did you think of it?"
"I'm not going to try and guess," said Frodo, smiling.
"You needn't," said Bilbo. "As a matter of fact, it was all mine, except that Aragorn insisted on my putting in a green stone. He seemed to think it was important. I don't know why. Otherwise, he obviously thought the whole thing rather above my head. And he said that if I had the cheek to make verses about the Arundel in the House of Elrond, it was my affair. I suppose he was right."
"I don't know," said Frodo. "It seemed for me to fit somehow, though I can't explain. I was half asleep when you began, and it seemed to follow on from something that I was dreaming about. I didn't understand that it was really you speaking until near the end."
"It's difficult to keep awake here until you get used to it," said Bilbo. "Not that hobbits would ever acquire quite the elvish appetite for music and poetry and tales. They seem to like them as much as food, or more.
They will be going on for a long time yet. What do you say to slipping off for some more quiet talk?
Can we? Said Frodo.
Of course. This is merry-making, not business. Come and go as you like, as long as you don't make a noise.
They got up and withdrew quietly into the shadows, and made for the doors. Sam they left behind, fast asleep, still with a smile on his face. In spite of his delight in Bilbo's company, Frodo felt a tug of regret as they passed out of the Hall of Fire. Even as they stepped over the threshold, a single clear voice rose in song.
Hoel bereth Gilthoniel, Silifren pen amiriel, Menel agla elenas, Na hired palan diriel. O galas reminen orath, Fano illos lelinathon, Ne fayar sine fayaron.
Frodo halted for a moment, looking back. Elrond was in his chair, and the fire was on his face like summer light upon the trees. Near him sat the Lady Arwen. To his surprise, Frodo saw that Aragorn stood beside her. His dark cloak was thrown back, and he seemed to be clad in elven mail, and a star shone on his breast. They spoke together, and then suddenly it seemed to Frodo that Arwen turned towards him, and the light of her eyes fell on him from afar and pierced his heart. He stood still, enchanted, while the sweet syllables of the elvish song fell like clear jewels of blended word and melody.
"It's a song to Elbereth," said Bilbo. "They will sing that and other songs of the Blessed Realm many times tonight. Come on."
He led Frodo back to his own little room. It opened onto the gardens and looked south across the ravine of the Bruinen. There they sat for some time, looking through the windows at the bright stars above the steep climbing woods, and talking softly. They spoke no more of the small news of the Shire far away, nor of the dark shadows and perils that encompassed them, but of the fair things they had seen in the world together, of the elves, of the stars, of trees, and the gentle fall of the bright year in the woods. At last there came a knock on the door.
"Begging your pardon," said Sam, putting in his head, "but I was just wondering if you would be wanting anything." "And begging yours, Sam Gamgee," replied Bilbo, "I guess you mean that it's time your master went to bed."
"Well, sir, there is a council early tomorrow, I hear, and he only got up today for the first time."
"Quite right, Sam," laughed Bilbo. "You can trot off and tell Gandalf that he's gone to bed. Good night, Frodo. Bless me, but it's been good to see you again. There are no folk like hobbits after all for a real good talk. I'm getting very old, and I begin to wonder if I should ever live to see your chapters of our story. Good night. I'll take a walk, I think, and look at the stars of Elbereth in the garden. Sleep well."
Chapter 2. The Council of Elrond. Next day Frodo woke early, feeling refreshed and well. He walked along the terraces above the loud-flowing Bruinen, and watched the pale, cool sun rise above the far mountains and shine down, slanting through the thin silver mist. The dew upon the yellow leaves was glimmering, and the woven nets of gossamer twinkled on every bush. Sam walked beside him, saying nothing, but sniffing the air, and looking every now and again with wonder in his eyes at the great heights in the east. The snow was white upon their peaks. On a seat cut in the stone beside a turn in the path, they came upon Gandalf and Bilbo deep in talk.
"Hallo! Good morning," said Bilbo. "Feel ready for the great council?"
"I feel ready for anything," answered Frodo. "But most of all I should like to go walking today and explore the valley. I should like to get into those pine woods up there."
He pointed away far up the side of Rivendell to the north.
"You may have a chance later," said Gandalf, "but we can't make any plans yet. There's much to hear and decide today."
Suddenly, as they were talking, a single clear bell rang out.
"That is the warning bell for the Council of Elrond," cried Gandalf. "Come along now. Both you and Bilbo are wanted."
Frodo and Bilbo followed the wizard quickly along the winding path back to the house. Behind them, uninvited and for the moment forgotten, trotted Sam. Gandalf led them to the porch where Frodo had found his friends the evening before. The light of the clear autumn morning was now glowing in the valley. The noise of bubbling waters came up from the foaming riverbed. Birds were singing, and a wholesome peace lay on the land. To Frodo, his dangerous flight, and the rumours of the darkness growing in the world outside, already seemed only the memories of a troubled dream. But the faces that were turned to meet them as they entered were grave. Elrond was there, and several others were seated in silence about him. Frodo saw Glorfindel and Gloin, and in a corner alone Strider was sitting, clad in his travel-worn clothes again. Elrond drew Frodo to a seat by his side and presented him to the company, saying,
"Here, my friends, is the hobbit, Frodo, son of Drogo. Few have ever come hither through greater peril or on an errand more urgent."
He then pointed out and named those whom Frodo had not met before. There was a younger dwarf at Gloin's side, his son Gimli. Beside Glorfindel, there were several other councillors of Elrond's household, of whom Erestor was the chief. And with him was Galdor, an elf from the Grey Havens, who had come on an errand from Círdan the shipwright. There was also a strange elf clad in green and brown, Legolas, a messenger from his father, Thranduil, the king of the elves of northern Mirkwood. And seated a little apart was a tall man with a fair and noble face, dark-haired and grey-eyed, proud and stern of glance. He was cloaked and booted as if for a journey on horseback, and indeed, though his garments were rich, and his cloak was lined with fur, they were stained with long travel. He had a collar of silver in which a single white stone was set. His locks were shorn about his shoulders. On a baldric he wore a great horn tipped with silver that now was laid upon his knees. He gazed at Frodo and Bilbo with sudden wonder. "Here," said Elrond, turning to Gandalf, "is Boromir, a man from the south. He arrived in the grey morning and seeks for counsel. I have bidden him to be present, for here his questions will be answered." Not all that was spoken and debated in the council need now be told. Much was said of events in the world outside, especially in the south, and in the wide lands east of the mountains. Of these things Frodo had already heard many rumours. But the tale of Gloin was new to him, and when the dwarf spoke he listened attentively. It appeared that amid the splendour of their works of hand, the hearts of the dwarves of the lonely mountain were troubled.
"It is now many years ago," said Gloin, "that a shadow of disquiet fell upon our people. Whence it came, we did not at first perceive. Words began to be whispered in secret. It was said that we were hemmed in a narrow place, and that greater wealth and splendour would be found in a wider world. Some spoke of Moria, the mighty works of our fathers that are called in our own tongue Khazad-dûm, and they declared that now, at last, we had the powers and numbers to return."
Gloin sighed.
"Moria, Moria, wonder of the northern world, too deep we delved there, and woke the nameless fear. Long have its vast mansions lain empty, since the children of Durin fled. But now we spoke of it again with longing, and yet with dread. For no dwarf has dared to pass the doors of Khazad-dûm for many lives of kings, save Thror only, and he perished.
At last, however, Balin listened to the whispers and resolved to go. And though Dane did not give leave willingly, he took with him Ori and Oin and many of our folk, and they went away south. That was nigh on 30 years ago. For a while we had news, and it seemed good. Messages reported that Moria had been entered, and a great work begun there. Then there was silence, and no word has ever come from Moria since. Then, about a year ago, a messenger came to Dane, but not from Moria, from Mordor, a horseman in the night who called Dane to his gate. The Lord Sauron the Great, so he said, wished for our friendship. Rings he would give for it, such as he gave of old, and he asked urgently concerning hobbits, of what kind they were, and where they dwelt. For Sauron knows, he said, that one of these was known to you on a time. At this we were greatly troubled, and we gave no answer. And then his voice was lowered, and he would have sweetened it if he could. As a small token only of your friendship, Sauron asks this, he said, that you should find this thief, such was his word, and get from him, willing or no, a little ring, the least of rings, that once he stole. It is but a trifle that Sauron fancies, and an earnest of your good will. Find it, and 3 rings that the dwarf sires possessed of old shall be returned to you, and the realm of Moria shall be yours for ever. Find only news of the thief, whether he still lives and where, and you shall have great reward and lasting friendship from the Lord. Refuse, and things will not seem so well. Do you refuse? At that his breath came like the hiss of snakes, and all who stood by shuddered. But Dain said, I say neither yea nor nay. I must consider this message, and what it means under its fair cloak. Consider well, but not too long, said he. The time of my thought is my own to spend, answered Dain. For the present, said he, and rode into the darkness. Heavy have the hearts of our chieftains been since that night. We needed not the fell voice of the messenger to warn us that his words held both menace and deceit, for we knew already that the power that has re-entered Mordor has not changed, and ever it betrayed us of old. Twice the messenger has returned, and has gone unanswered. The third and last time, so he says, is soon to come, before the ending of the year. And so I have been sent at last by Dain to warn Bilbo that he is sought by the enemy, and to learn, if may be, why he desires this ring, this least of rings. Also we crave the advice of Elrond, for the shadow grows and draws nearer. We discover that messengers have come also to King Brand in Dale, and that he is afraid. We fear that he may yield. Already war is gathering on his eastern borders. If we make no answer, the enemy may move men of his rule to assail King Brand and Dain also.
You have done well to come, said Elrond. You will hear today all that you need in order to understand the purposes of the enemy. There is naught that you can do other than to resist, with hope or without it. But you do not stand alone. You will learn that your trouble is but part of the trouble of all the Western world. The ring. What shall we do with the ring, the least of rings, the trifle that Sauron fancies? That is the doom that we must deem. That is the purpose for which you were called hither. Called, I say, though I have not called you to me, strangers from distant lands. You have come and are here met, in this very nick of time, by chance, as it may seem. Yet it is not so. Believe, rather, that it is so ordered that we, who sit here, and none others, must now find counsel for the perils of the world. Now, therefore, things shall be openly spoken that have been hidden from all but a few until this day. And first, so that all may understand what is in the peril, the tale of the ring shall be told from the beginning even to this present,
and I will begin that tale, though others shall end it."
Then all listened while Elrond in his clear voice spoke of Sauron and the Ring of Power, and their forging in the second age of the world long ago. A part of his tale was known to some there, but the full tale to none, and many eyes were turned to Elrond in fear and wonder as he told of the elven smiths of Eregion, and their friendship with Moria, and their eagerness for knowledge, by which Sauron ensnared them. For in that time he was not yet evil to behold, and they received his aid and grew mighty in craft, whereas he learned all their secrets and betrayed them, and forged secretly in the Mountain of Fire the One Ring to be their master. But Celebrimbor was aware of him, and hid the three which he had made, and there was war, and the land was laid waste, and the gate of Moria was shut. Then through all the years that followed he traced the ring. But since that history is elsewhere recounted, even as Elrond himself set it down in his books of lore, it is not here recalled. For it is a long tale, full of deeds great and terrible, and briefly though Elrond spoke, the sun rode up the sky, and the morning was passing ere he ceased. Of Númenor he spoke, its glory and its fall, and the return of the kings to Middle-earth out of the deeps of the sea, borne upon the wings of storm. Then Elendil the Tall and his mighty sons, Isildur and Anarion, became great lords, and the North Realm they made in Arnor, and the South Realm in Gondor above the mouths of Anduin. But Sauron of Mordor assailed them, and they made the last alliance of elves and men, and the hosts of Gil-galad and Elendil were mustered in Arnor. Thereupon Elrond paused a while and sighed. "I remember well the splendour of their banners," he said. "It recalled to me the glory of the elder days and the hosts of Beleriand. So many great princes and captains were assembled, and yet not so many, nor so fair, as when Thangorodrim was broken, and the elves deemed that evil was ended for ever, and it was not so." "You remember?" said Frodo, speaking his thought aloud in his astonishment. "But I thought," he stammered as Elrond turned towards him, "I thought that the fate of Gil-galad was a long-ago time."
"So it was indeed," answered Elrond gravely, "but my memory reaches back even to the elder days. Earendil was my sire, who was born in Gondolin before its fall, and my mother was Elwing, daughter of Dior, son of Lúthien of Doriath. I have seen three ages in the west of the world, and many defeats, and many fruitless victories. I was the herald of Gil-galad, and marched with his host. I was at the battle of Dagorlad, before the black gate of Mordor, when we had the mastery, for the spear of Gil-galad and the sword of Elendil, Aeglos and Narsil, none could withstand. I beheld the last combat on the slopes of Orodruin, where Gil-galad died, and Elendil fell, and Narsil broke beneath him. But Sauron himself was overthrown, and Isildur cut the ring from his hand with a hilt shard of his father's sword, and took it for his own." At this the stranger, Boromir, broke in.
"So that is what became of the ring," he cried. "If ever such a tale was told in the south, it has long been forgotten. I've heard of the great ring of him that we do not name, but we believe that it perished from the world in the ruin of his first realm. Isildur took it. That is tidings indeed."
"Alas, yes," said Elrond. "Isildur took it, as should not have been. It should have been cast then into Orodruin's fire, nigh at hand, where it was made. But few marked what Isildur did. He alone stood by his father in that last mortal contest, and by Gil-galad only Círdan stood and I. But Isildur would not listen to our counsel. 'This I will have as Wergild for my father and my brother,' he said. And therefore, whether we would or no, he took it to treasure it.
but soon he was betrayed by it to his death, and so it is named in the north Isildur's Bane. Yet death maybe was better than what else might have befallen him. Only to the north did these tidings come, and only to a few. Small wonder it is that you have not heard them, Boromir. From the ruin of the Gladdenfields, where Isildur perished, 3 men only came ever back over the mountains after long wandering. One of these was Ochtar, the esquire of Isildur, who bore the shards of the sword of Elendil, and he brought them to Valandil, the heir of Isildur, who, being but a child, had remained here in Rivendell. But Narsil was broken, and its light extinguished, and it has not yet been forged again. Fruitless did I call the victory of the last alliance? Not wholly so, yet it did not achieve its end. Sauron was diminished, but not destroyed. His ring was lost, but not unmade. The Dark Tower was broken, but its foundations were not removed, for they were made with the power of the ring, and while it remains, they will endure. Many elves and many mighty men and many of their friends had perished in the war. An Arion was slain, and Isildur was slain, and Gil-galad and Elendil were no more. Never again shall there be any such leagues of elves and men, for men multiply, and the firstborn decrease, and the two kindreds are estranged. And ever since that day the race of Númenor has decayed, and the span of their years has lessened. In the north, after the war and the slaughter of the Gladdenfields, the men of Westernesse were diminished, and their city of Annúminas, besides Lake Evendim, fell into ruin, and the heirs of Valandil removed and dwelt at Fornost, on the high north downs, and that now too is desolate. Men call it Dead Men's Dyke, and they fear to tread there, for the folk of Arnor dwindled, and their foes devoured them, and their lordship passed, leaving only green mounds in the grassy hills. In the south the realm of Gondor long endured, and for a while its splendour grew, recalling somewhat of the might of Númenor, ere it fell. High towers that people built, and strong places, and havens of many ships, and the winged crown of the kings of men was held in awe by folk of many tongues. Their chief city was Osgiliath, citadel of the stars, through the midst of which the river flowed, and Minas Ithil they built, tower of the rising moon, eastward upon a shoulder of the mountains of shadow, and westward at the feet of the white mountains, Minas Anor they made, tower of the setting sun. There in the courts of the king grew a white tree, from the seed of that tree which Isildur brought over the deep waters, and the seed of that tree before came from Eresea, and before that out of the uttermost west, in the day before days when the world was young. But in the wearing of the swift years of Middle-earth, the line of Meneldil, son of Anarion, failed, and the tree withered, and the blood of the Númenóreans became mingled with that of lesser men. Then the watch upon the walls of Mordor slept, and dark things crept back to Gorgoroth. And on a time evil things came forth, and they took Minas Ithil, and abode in it, and they made it into a place of dread, and it is called Minas Morgul. Then Minas Anor was named anew Minas Tirith, the Tower of God, and these two cities were ever at war. But Osgiliath, which lay between, was deserted, and in its ruins shadows walked. So it has been for many lives of men. But the lords of Minas Tirith still fight on, defying our enemies, keeping the passage of the river from Argonath to the sea. And now that part of the tale that I shall tell is drawn to its close. For in the days of Isildur the ruling ring passed out of all knowledge, and the three were released from its dominion. But now in this latter day they are in peril once more,
for to our sorrow the one has been found. Others shall speak of its finding, for in that I played small part." He ceased, but at once Boromir stood up, tall and proud, before them.
"Give me leave, Master Elrond," said he, "first to say more of Gondor, for verily from the land of Gondor I am come. And it would be well for all to know what passes there, for few, I deem, know of our deeds, and therefore guess little of their peril if we should fail at last. Believe not that in the land of Gondor the blood of Numenor is spent, nor all its pride and dignity forgotten. By our valour the wild folk of the East are still restrained, and the terror of Morgul kept at bay, and thus alone are peace and freedom maintained in the lands behind us, bulwark of the West. But if the passages of the river should be won, what then? Yet that hour, maybe, is not now far away. The nameless enemy has arisen again. Smoke rises once more from Orodruin that we call Mount Doom. The power of the Black Land grows, and we are hard beset. When the enemy returned, our folk were driven from Ithilien, our fair domain east of the river, though we kept a foothold there and strength of arms. But this very year, in the days of June, sudden war came upon us out of Mordor, and we were swept away. We were outnumbered, for Mordor has allied itself with the Easterlings and the cruel Haradrim. But it was not by numbers that we were defeated. A power was there that we have not felt before. Some said that it could be seen, like a great black horseman, a dark shadow under the moon. Wherever he came, a madness filled our foes, but fear fell on our boldest, so that horse and man gave way and fled. Only a remnant of our eastern force came back, destroying the last bridge that stood amid the ruins of Osgiliath. I was in the company that held the bridge, until it was cast down behind us. Four only were saved by swimming, my brother and myself and two others. But still we fight on, holding all the west shores of Anduin, and those who shelter behind us give us praise, if ever they hear our name. Much praise, but little help. Only from Rohan now will any men ride to us when we call. In this evil hour I have come on an errand over many dangerous leagues to Elrond. 110 days I have journeyed all alone, but I do not seek allies in war. The might of Elrond is in wisdom, not in weapons, it is said. I come to ask for counsel and the unravelling of hard words. For on the eve of the sudden assault, a dream came to my brother in a troubled sleep, and afterwards a like dream came oft to him again, and once to me. In that dream I thought the eastern sky grew dark, and there was a growing thunder, but in the west a pale light lingered, and out of it I heard a voice, remote but clear, crying, "Seek for the sword that was broken. In Imladris it dwells. There shall be counsels taken stronger than Morgul's spells. There shall be shown a token that doom is near at hand. For Isildur's bane shall waken, and the halfling forth shall stand." Of these words we could understand little, and we spoke to our father, Denethor, lord of Minas Tirith, wise in the lore of Gondor. This only would he say, that Imladris was of old the name among the elves of a far northern dale, where Elrond the half-elven dwelt, greatest of lawmasters. Therefore, my brother, seeing how desperate was our need, was eager to heed the dream and seek for Imladris. But since the way was full of doubt and danger, I took the journey upon myself. Loath was my father to give me leave, and long have I wandered by roads forgotten, seeking the house of Elrond, of which many had heard, but few knew where it lay. "And here in the house of Elrond more shall be made clear to you," said Aragorn, standing up.
He cast his sword upon the table that stood before Elrond, and the blade was in two pieces.
"Here is the sword that was broken," he said.
"And who are you, and what have you to do with Minas Tirith?" asked Boromir,
looking in wonder at the lean face of the ranger and his weather-stained cloak.
"He is Aragorn, son of Arathorn," said Elrond, "and he is descended through many fathers from Isildur, Elendil's son, of Minas Ithil. He is the chief of the Dúnedain in the north, and few are now left of that folk."
"Then it belongs to you, and not to me at all," cried Frodo in amazement, springing to his feet, as if he expected the ring to be demanded at once.
"It does not belong to either of us," said Aragorn, "but it has been ordained that you should hold it for a while." "Bring out the ring, Frodo," said Gandalf solemnly. "The time has come. Hold it up, and then Boromir will understand the remainder of his riddle."
There was a hush, and all turned their eyes on Frodo. He was shaken by a sudden shame and fear, and he felt a great reluctance to reveal the ring, and a loathing of its touch. He wished he was far away. The ring gleamed and flickered as he held it up before them in his trembling hand.
"Behold Isildur's bane," said Elrond.
Boromir's eyes glinted as he gazed at the golden thing. "The halfling," he muttered.
"Is then the doom of Minas Tirith come at last? But why then should we seek a broken sword?" "The words were not the doom of Minas Tirith," said Aragorn, "but doom and great deeds are indeed at hand. For the sword that was broken is a sword of Elendil that broke beneath him when he fell. It has been treasured by his heirs when all other heirlooms were lost, for it was spoken of old among us that it should be made again when the ring, Isildur's bane, was found. Now you have seen the sword that you have sought. What would you ask? Do you wish for the house of Elendil to return to the land of Gondor?" "I was not sent to beg any boon, but to seek only the meaning of a riddle," answered Boromir proudly. "Yet we are hard-pressed, and the sword of Elendil would be a help beyond our hope, if such a thing could indeed return out of the shadows of the past." He looked again at Aragorn, and doubt was in his eyes. Frodo felt Bilbo stir impatiently at his side. Evidently, he was annoyed on his friend's behalf. Standing suddenly up, he burst out,
"All that is gold does not glitter. Not all those who wander are lost. The old that is strong does not wither. Deep roots are not reached by the frost. From the ashes a fire shall be woken. A light from the shadows shall spring. Renewed shall be blade that was broken. The crownless again shall be king."
"Not very good, perhaps, but to the point, if you need more beyond the word of Elrond. If that was worth a journey of 110 days to hear, you had best listen to it." He sat down with a snort.
"I made that up myself," he whispered to Frodo, "for the Dúnedain, a long time ago, when he first told me about himself. I almost wish that my adventures were not over, and that I could go with him when his day comes."
Aragorn smiled at him. Then he turned to Boromir again.
"For my part, I forgive your doubt," he said. "Little do I resemble the figures of Elendil and Isildur as they stand carven in their majesty in the halls of Denethor. I am but the heir of Isildur, not Isildur himself. I have had a hard life and a long, and the leagues that lie between here and Gondor are a small part in the count of my journeys. I have crossed many mountains and many rivers, and trodden many plains, even into the far countries of Rún and Harad, where the stars are strange. But my home, such as I have, is in the north, for here the heirs of Valandil have ever dwelt in long line unbroken from father unto son for many generations. Our days have darkened, and we have dwindled, but ever the sword has passed to a new keeper. And this I will say to you, Boromir, ere I end. Lonely men are we, rangers of the wild, hunters, but hunters ever of the servants of the enemy, for they are found in many places, not in Mordor only. If Gondor, Boromir, has been a stalwart tower, we have played another part. Many evil things there are that your strong walls and bright swords do not stay. You know little of the lands beyond your bounds. Peace and freedom, do you say? The North would have known them little but for us. Fear would have destroyed them. But when dark things come from the houseless hills, or creep from sunless woods, they fly from us. What roads would any dare to tread? What safety would there be in quiet lands, or in the homes of simple men at night, if the Dúnedain were asleep, or were all gone into the grave? And yet less thanks have we than you. Travellers scowl at us, and countrymen give us scornful names. Strider I am to one fat man who lives within a day's march of foes that would freeze his heart, or lay his little town in ruin if he were not guarded ceaselessly. Yet we would not have it otherwise. If simple folk are free from care and fear, simple they will be, and we must be secret to keep them so. That has been the task of my kindred, while the years have lengthened and the grass has grown. But now the world is changing once again. A new hour comes. Isildur's bane is found. Battle is at hand. The sword shall be reforged. I will come to Minas Tirith.
Isildur's bane is found, you say? Said Boromir. I have seen a bright ring in the halfling's hand, but Isildur perished ere this age of the world began, they say. How do the wise know that this ring is his? And how has it passed down the years until it is brought hither by so strange a messenger?
That shall be told, said Elrond. But not yet, I beg, master, said Bilbo. Already the sun is climbing to noon, and I feel the need of something to strengthen me. I had not named you, said Elrond, smiling, but I do so now. Come, tell us your tale, and if you have not yet cast your story into verse, you may tell it in plain words. The briefer, the sooner shall you be refreshed.
Very well, said Bilbo. I will do as you bid, but I will now tell the true story, and if some here have heard me tell it otherwise, he looked sidelong at Gloin, I ask them to forget it and forgive me. I only wished to claim the treasure as my very own in those days, and to be rid of the name of thief that was put on me. But perhaps I understand things a little better now. Anyway, this is what happened. To some there Bilbo's tale was wholly new, and they listened with amazement while the old hobbit, actually not at all displeased, recounted his adventure with Gollum at full length. He did not omit a single riddle. He would have given also an account of his party and disappearance from the Shire, if he had been allowed, but Elrond raised his hand.
"Well told, my friend," he said, "but that is enough at this time. For the moment it suffices to know that the ring passed to Frodo, your heir. Let him now speak."
Then, less willingly than Bilbo, Frodo told of all his dealings with the ring from the day that it passed into his keeping. Every step of his journey from Hobbiton to the ford of Bruinen was questioned and considered, and everything that he could tell concerning the Black Riders was examined. At last he sat down.
"Not bad," Bilbo said to him. "You would have made a good story of it, if they hadn't kept on interrupting. I tried to make a few notes. But we shall have to go over it all again together some time, if I'm to write it up. There are whole chapters of stuff before you ever got here."
"Yes, it made quite a long tale," answered Frodo, "but the story still does not seem complete to me. I still want to know a good deal, especially from Gandalf." Galdor of the Havens, who sat nearby, overheard him. "You speak for me also," he cried, and turning to Elrond he said, "The wise may have good reason to believe that the halfling's trove is indeed the great ring of long debate,
unlikely though that may seem to those who know less. But may we not hear the proofs? And I would ask this also.